Picture this. You're taxiing out to runway 27, checklist done, and the ATIS said winds 310 at 15 knots. Somewhere in the back of your head a voice says, "That's going to be a crosswind," but you got in the airplane anyway. You're rolling toward the runway, and you actually don't know how much crosswind that is. Not the number, just the feeling. I've been there, I've had students there. And that combination of not knowing the number and proceeding anyway doesn't end well when the crosswind turns out to be what it turns out to be. I'm Pattern on Traffic Pattern, right here on Radio Hangar. Today we're breaking down crosswind component calculation. Not because math is fun, though some of us think it kind of is. We're doing it because the calculation is a go or no-go decision tool, and you should be running it before every flight where the wind is not straight down the center line. Before we get into it, quick shout out to AviationSoul.com. They make high-quality challenge coins for every milestone in your aviation journey. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, commercial certificate. If you want something tangible to mark how far you've come, or a great gift for a fellow pilot who just hit a milestone in training, check them out at AviationSoul.com. All right, crosswind components. The first thing to know is that your airplane has a number published for this. It's in the pilot's operating handbook, usually in the limitations section or near the performance charts. The Cessna 172 Skyhawk has a demonstrated crosswind component of about 15 knots. The Piper Warrior is around 17. Most piston trainers fall in the 12 to 17 knot range, but here's what a lot of students don't realize. That word demonstrated is doing a lot of work in that number. The demonstrated crosswind component is not a regulatory limit. It is the maximum crosswind at which the manufacturer actually conducted flight testing and documented acceptable aircraft handling. Below that number, the data supports the airplane performing as published. Above it, you are operating outside the tested envelope. The airplane might still handle fine, but the manufacturer has no data to back it up. And if something goes wrong above that value, that fact is going to be part of every conversation about what happened. So when a student asks me, can I fly in a 15-knot crosswind in a Skyhawk? The legal answer is, there is no regulation that prohibits it if you feel competent. The practical answer is, do you want to find the edge of the envelope in a training airplane with limited experience? That is a very different question. This is why the calculation matters. You need to know the number you're dealing with, not just a gut feeling. Here's how to calculate it. The crosswind component equals the wind speed multiplied by the sine of the angle between the wind direction and the runway heading. That angle is your crosswind angle. You find it by subtracting one heading from the other, whichever gives you the smaller number. Let's run our example. Winds 310 at 15. Runway heading 270, 310 minus 270 is 40 degrees. Your crosswind angle is 40 degrees. The sine of 40 degrees is approximately 0.64. 15 times 0.64 is 9.6 knots, about 10 knots of crosswind. Simple enough on paper. But nobody is sitting in the run-up area punching sine functions into a calculator. So here is the mental math version that every working pilot knows. Think of the wind angle as a clock position off the runway center line. If the wind is about 30 degrees off the runway, your crosswind component is roughly half the wind speed. 15 knots at 30 degrees, about 7.5 knots crosswind. 45 degrees off, multiply by 0.7, 15 knots at 45 degrees, about 10.5 knots. 60 degrees off, multiply by 0.85, 15 knots at 60 degrees, about 13 knots. And at 90 degrees straight across the runway, the crosswind component is 100% of the wind speed. Four reference points, 30, 45, 60, 90 interpolate between them, and you have a real answer in about 10 seconds. That is fast enough to run in your head while you're waiting for the run-up to finish. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was in training. The demonstrated crosswind component in your pilot's operating handbook is the aircraft's documented limit. Your personal limit should be lower than that, at least until you have logged consistent, stable crosswind landings at progressively higher component values. The airman certification standards require you to demonstrate crosswind operations, quote, within the personal limits established by the applicant, end quote. That language is deliberate. The FAA is telling you this is your decision to own, not your instructor's, not the examiner's, yours, My advice, build to it. Fly 5-knot crosswinds until the correction is instinctive, then 8, then 10. Each time you feel in control and the landing is smooth, you can take that number up a notch. Each time the airplane gets away from you, or the landing feels like luck rather than skill. That is information too, and that information should push your personal limit back, not forward. Now, let's talk about the headwind component, because we tend to underestimate how much it matters. When you calculate the crosswind component, you automatically have what you need to find the headwind component too. The headwind is the wind speed multiplied by the cosine of the crosswind angle. Or with the clock rule, at 30 degrees off the runway, your headwind is about 87% of the wind speed at 45 degrees, 70% at 60 degrees, 50%, and at 90 degrees, zero. No headwind at all. Why does that matter? Two specific reasons. First, your headwind component directly affects your ground speed at the threshold. More headwind means slower ground speed at approach speed, less float in the flare, shorter landing roll. A heavy crosswind with low headwind component means you're covering more ground at the same indicated airspeed. You will use more runway. If you're landing at a short strip, that is worth knowing before you commit to the approach. Second, the headwind component affects your takeoff performance. Pilots' operating handbook charts typically let you subtract a portion of the headwind from your ground roll. If your wind is mostly crosswind, you're not getting that headwind credit. Your actual takeoff performance will look closer to calm wind conditions, even though the wind is strong. Let me put that into a scenario. You're departing a 3,000-foot runway with trees at the departure end. Density altitude is elevated, temperature is 85 degrees Fahrenheit, winds are 270 at 18 knots, and your runway heading is 250. Crosswind angle is 20 degrees. Crosswind component, 18 times the sine of 20, about 6 knots. Headwind component, 18 times the cosine of 20, about 17 knots.
That is a favorable picture.
Low crosswind, strong headwind working in your favor on both the roll and the initial climb. Now flip it. Same airport, same density altitude, but winds shift to 330 at 18 knots. Runway still 250. Crosswind angle is now 80 degrees. Crosswind component about 17.5 knots. Headwind component about 3 knots. Same wind speed. Completely different flight. You are at or above the demonstrated crosswind component, and you are getting almost no headwind advantage at all. That is the moment you ask yourself whether this flight departs today or whether you wait for the winds to back around. One thing worth mentioning that does not always get covered in ground school. The wind reported in the ATS or given by tower is measured at a sensor somewhere on the airport property. That sensor may be at the approach end or somewhere on the field that is not where your wheels are about to touch. The surface wind at the threshold is not always exactly what is on the frequency. Wind socks are your friend. If the ATIS says winds 120 at 10 and the sock at the approach end is fully extended and pointing toward you on final, the surface wind may be stronger than reported. If the sock is hanging limp when the ATIS says 12 knots, something in the local terrain is blocking the flow. Trust both sources and use them to cross-check each other, and be aware of mechanical turbulence. If the crosswind is flowing over hangars, trees, or terrain features before it reaches the runway, you can get significant turbulence and wind shear in the last few hundred feet of the approach. That is not captured in any wind report. It is something you observe, anticipate, and manage with speed and energy. Now technique. Briefly, because technique is the other half of the crosswind picture. Two primary methods. The crab and the side slip. Most instructors teach a combination. In the crab approach, you point the nose into the wind during final to maintain the extended center line. The nose is angled, the track is straight. Just before touchdown, you align the nose with the runway using rudder and simultaneously input aileron into the wind to prevent drift. You touch down on the upwind main gear first. The side slip, sometimes called the wing low technique, is where you use aileron into the wind and opposite rudder throughout the approach, maintaining both runway alignment and centerline simultaneously. The upwind wing is low. The nose stays pointed down the runway, and the airplane slips sideways through the air at the same rate the wind is pushing it across the pavement. Most instructors teach the crab on final transitioning to a side slip in the flare because touching down in a full crab puts a lateral load on the gear that it is not designed to absorb cleanly. The side slip at the flare aligns you with the center line before the wheels make contact. The airman certification standards want to see you touch down in the proper wind correction attitude, tracking the center line. The examiner is watching for that coordination aileron, into the wind and opposite rudder working together to hold you on the line without drift, and gusts. I almost forgot gusts, which is exactly what they want you to do. When the AT says winds 180 at 12, gusting to 22, run your crosswind calculation using the gust value, not the steady wind. The airplane is going to feel the 22-knot gust, and it will probably feel it at the worst possible moment, usually in the flare when you have the speed bled down and the correction established for 12 knots. The gust comes through and your correction is suddenly wrong. Use the peak gust, always. And in gusty conditions, add about 5 knots to your approach speed. Most pilots' operating handbooks have a note to this effect in the performance section. The reasoning is straightforward. Gusts cause sudden airspeed changes, and a small speed buffer keeps you out of the critical range between approach speed and stall. For a Cessna 172, where the normal approach speed might be 65 knots, you're flying 69 or 70 on final. That margin is your insurance against the gust that shows up when you least want it. One last thing before I close. Brief yourself before every crosswind approach. Literally say it. When I reach the flare, I add up wind aileron and opposite rudder. Say it before you start the approach, not during the flare when the ground is rushing up and the correction feels unfamiliar. Brief procedures become reflexes. Unplanned procedures become incidents. Sources today are the FAA Airplane Flying Handbook, Chapter 8 on Crosswind Approaches and Landings, and the Airman Certification Standards for Private Pilot. Pull out the crosswind component chart in your own pilot's operating handbook before your next gusty day. More at RadioHangar.com. I'm Pattern. Fly it smooth.